My name is Karina Harney, Playboy's Playmate of the Year, 1992.
And I'm Echo Johnson, Miss January, 1993. Welcome to the Bunny Chronicles. Let's go. Welcome back to the show. We've got Miss Carrie Yazel back in the studio with us.
Hi, Echo. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, we are excited because we have the Butlers. We have another round of interviews today with Carlina and Bryant that were at the mansion for several years. Karina and I got the opportunity to interview JD, Jameson, and Brian in one sitting, and it was by far, it is the most downloaded show, and people are dying to know.
I love it. It's the inside. It's the intel. Yeah.
Yeah. What it was like.
It's a dream job for many, many people.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what we're going to, like, how did it come to be?
Yes.
So let's go ahead and introduce our guest. We've got Bryant joining us on the left. He's in paradise.
I am.
And we've got Carlina on the right, and she's joining us from Vegas. Thanks, guys, for calling in. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So let's just begin with Bryant. Go ahead and just introduce yourself, how many years you were at the mansion, and then same with you, Carlina, and then we'll go in.
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Bryant Horowitz, and I worked at the mansion for 18 years. From 1997 until 2016.
Wow, I didn't know you were that long. That's a good run.
Amazing.
At the time that I finished, I was 36 and I started at 18. So it was literally by the time I worked my last shift, it was half my life.
Wow, that's actually really interesting. And starting at 18. Okay, so I have to get into that, how that came to be. All right, and Miss Carlina, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi. I'm Carlina Bryant. I started at Playboy when I was 12.
Love it.
That's a first.
That's equal opportunity employment.
Yeah, I don't want to date myself, but yeah, I think it was like 98, but my first big party I think was in 2000.
Okay.
And then ending date was 2017.
So Carlina was actually there when Hef passed. And so we'll get into that because that's kind of a unique, not kind of, that is definitely a unique situation. So we like to ask anybody that worked in the house, and our audience likes to know, how does one come to be a Playboy Mansion butler? And what was that journey like? Carlina, why don't we start with you?
I fell into it. DeAndre Massey and myself and Kia Wells were working at a restaurant.
Okay.
And Hef's twin, Sandy and Mandy, used to come in. Now, we didn't know. I don't think we even knew who Hef was. Mm. I think that's the cool thing. And I think that's the reason maybe why I wasn't intimidated.
Makes sense.
Who's this? So they told DeAndre first. They were like, you should work where we live. But they were really like vague. So he calls me up and he says, it's the Playboy Mansion. Like, the Playboy what? Like, Playboy Mansion, really cool. There's birds, animals, a zoo. So within like 2 weeks, I get a call, and I think it was from JD because he used to be a house office manager.
That's right.
And he says, hey, we're having girls come in. Would you like to work? It's like, okay. And I show up and fill out the paperwork, and the rest is history.
And were you the only female butler there? You're the only female butler I remember seeing there.
No, there was a few of us. It was me, Sheila, okay. Kia, and Ruth. And I think there might have been one or two more. Eileen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like five of us.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. All right. And Bryant, so at 18, were you out of high school? That's like me.
Yes.
I was 18 when I did my centerfold. Straight out of high school. So how'd you end up at the Playboy Mansion?
So I was in my first year of community college at Santa Monica College. And it's one of those things where obviously if they post it online somewhere, if they post it in a newspaper, you're going to get too many people coming in. So what ended up happening was it's basically like a catering gig. It's word of mouth.
Right.
So people that work there, if they last and don't, you know, get caught talking to the girls or do something stupid, and they work, you know, long enough, then they can establish a relationship where they can recommend other people to come into the house. So my friend Justin recommended my friend Anu, and Anu and I had been friends since middle school, and he and I would carpool to school. And he said, you know, everybody and their mom asked me to work at the mansion. Why haven't you asked me? And I said, well, of course I want to work there, but I'm not going to be like everybody else because I don't want to just make you think that I'm using you just to do that because we've been friends for a long time. I figure if you know that I'm a hard worker and you know that I'd make you, you know, maybe not make you look good, but not make you look bad in front of the bosses, then you would get me the job. So my buddy Anu recommended me. And then I came and worked a party. It was just a little private Cedar Sinai benefit party in June of 1997. And from there, I kind of worked my way up to full-time butler, and the rest is history. So it was just, you know, like a catering gig. It's, you know, recommendations.
Yeah. Was that pretty intimidating to come in at the first time, the first party where you're a little blown away?
Yes. It was definitely intimidating the first time because you walk through the gates and it's a completely different environment. It's
world.
It's a completely different world, as you said. And this was, you know, before I met Hef or any of the girls or anything like that. First time I come up and I just see a silent auction with thousands of dollars worth of merchandise and a couple of celebrities that were not A-list celebrities, but they were still pretty well known that were playing and doing kind of a celebrity tennis tournament. And just walking in, it was really intimidating. And that was even before any of the right interesting people came around.
I like how you said that, the interesting
nice.
People.
Nice.
Yeah, for wow. sure. Yeah, we always ask that too, like, what was your first impression? Carlina, I think that was interesting too, that you didn't really know, like did you, obviously knew like what the Playboy Mansion was, but.
Actually, I don't think I did.
Really?
Okay. I'd never seen a Playboy. I really didn't.
Interesting.
Which is weird, but. You know, I grew up in a religious family, even though my dad was like totally cool with Hef and totally proud that I worked there.
Yeah, that's right. You shared that with me. Tell our audience the story, because I thought that was real cool what your father said to you, because you were a little like concerned that he was going to be like,
Yeah. Like I grew up in a religious family in church every weekend. So when I get the job, I call back home and I'm like, Dad, you know, I'm working at the Playboy Mansion and I'm just pouring water, sir. Just pouring water.
<That's> and
he said, you know what? It's your life. He said, you ought to be proud. That's an honor to work for him.
Wow. He gets it. So like,
yeah.
He got it.
Wow.
He would always ask, how's he doing?
Yeah.
They're kind of similar. Like I lost my dad in 2021. So it's kind of like the two, weirdly, the Hef and my dad are the two things that stick out.
Aww.
You know, the emotion behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
to this day, I still.
Yeah. I definitely can say that, you know, Hef for a lot of us was definitely a father figure. And that's how we viewed him. You know, yes, he was our boss, but, you know, he just had all of our best interest at heart and we were consummately protected.
That's also why we want to protect and honor his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that we would feel if he were our father. That's what I would always want.
Absolutely.
To people to know. The man that we know.
Yeah. That's why it was so disturbing for all of us when all this bullshit has come out. That is the furthest thing from the truth. So
completely.
Right.
Brant, did it, having a job at the mansion affect your relationships?
Did it affect my relationships? No, actually. The funny thing about it was, you know, you get to be working longer and longer if you don't break rules and things like that. So we were always friendly to the girls, but not overly friendly and never tried anything, obviously, that would be looked upon as beyond the rules.
Swift dismissal, so, I would say.
Exactly. So, yeah. So the funny thing about it, you know, I dated girls outside of the mansion, and they were intrigued by the fact that I worked there. And when I had more serious relationships, the two serious relationships, one that I thought I was going to marry, and she knows, Carlina knows, and then the one that I did marry, I got them both jobs at the mansion to work.
That's the way of solving the problem.
Well,
that's
because
brilliant.
I was such good friends with the Playmates. And then when they met my significant others, you know, and Carlina can attest to this too. Like if anything happened at work, if I did something wrong, those girls would probably tell my girlfriends, now my wife, before I had the chance to. So I wouldn't be able to. So that was kind of a strategic move because I wouldn't be able to get away with anything like that. And therefore, they were a little more secure about that. Plus, the fact that I'd been working there for so long before anything with them kind of gave them a baseline where they know that, you know, if you're not getting fired, if you're not doing things behind closed doors, then it's probably not a threat to our relationship. So,
yeah, because if they assume a lot, but then if you put them in the same place where you're working, there's no mystery. There's no guessing. They're not worried about things that they can't see. Now it's right. Like you're on a level. That's great. That's
I love that cool. idea.
I love that too. So,
well, for some reason, I call him Horny Wits.
That's right. That's great. Horny
That's
Wits.
Still fair.
That's going to stick. I'm going to remember that one, Carlina. That's awesome.
Jameson still uses it sometimes, too.
That's not like something Jameson would say. He's so damn funny.
Yeah, how did that happen?
How did that happen?
I don't know. You came up with it, though. Get the trademark, copyright,
the credit.
Yeah.
Or anyway, so you guys came in then after Hef was well, definitely separated from Kimberly, but she was living next door with the boys. So you came in when he was with Mandy, Sandy, and Brandy, right?
Yeah, that's when Carlina came in. I came in the last 3 months of Kimberly.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So when I started, she was there. And actually there's a funny story about why my buddy Anu, who recommended me, was no longer there after I started. But yeah, I came in June of 97, worked a few parties, and then she and the kids moved next door in February of 98.
Right. Okay. Got it. And then, so then all you knew Carlina was half with the multiple girlfriends. So it wasn't like
I had the honor of meeting Kimberly, and I remember my first experience. She comes up the driveway with the boys and the dogs, and she goes, "Where did they find you?" I'm like, "What?" But she had never seen a female.
Yeah.
So I think that's what she meant.
Oh,
so
no,
I think
sure.
2 days, 2 days later, she's talking to one of the chefs, and they're looking my direction. And I'm like, so I go up to the chef and I said, "What are you guys talking about?" She's like, "I'll tell you later." I'm like, "No, tell me now. Tell me now." She's like, "Oh, she wants to know if you want to keep her boys."
Aww.
I'm like, "Keep them where?" Like, keep. I end up turning it down and working for Tina Jordan instead.
Oh, that's right. Because Tina had her little baby there when she was living there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we both babysat Tatiana.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That's cool. I remember that. Wild.
You can never tell the twists and turns your life is going to take.
Uh-uh.
Who would know? I mean, first you're working there. Next thing you know, now you're helping with the actually directly in the family. That, I mean, that's pretty deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Thanks to Brian Olea.
Good up, Brian.
So really quickly, I just wanted to say that when I started and from the time that Hef had the mansion at, you know, in L.A. and probably back in Chicago, the idea was that it was men only as butlers. And it was not until right before Carlina came in that there was that rule was stricken down. And they're like, we can have female butlers now, which actually proved later on to be very beneficial because Carlina served, and she can tell you all about this, but she kind of served as their aide when they were sick or if there were surgeries or things like that, because it's actually more advantageous to have a female with you than any of the male butlers that are, you know, if you just had your breasts done and you've got bandages and you need somebody to help you with things. It was actually perfect because that was kind of Carlina's go-to job.
That's wild.
So that none of us disgusting boys would be in the room during that time. It was really funny to me that, you know, that's just how it was. It was males only, males only, males only. And in fact, I had an ex-girlfriend who was supposed to be the first signed up female butler to work parties, and it never worked out with her. And then here comes Carlina just a month or two later.
That's such a cool factoid. Thank you for sharing that. Every single show we do, y'all, we get this little golden nugget of history out of whatever guest and find out something new about Playboy. And that's definitely my favorite part of doing these interviews. I had no idea about that. I assumed, because I had never seen any female butlers until Carlina was there, and I loved it. I was like, oh, rad. We got a female in the house.
It makes so much sense. I wasn't even sure if Carlina knew that. So that's another reason why I brought it up.
Yeah, Mickey made sure to tell me.
Oh, right, right. Of course.
Yeah, special position that you just got into. That's cool. So, okay, we always have to talk about the first time you met Huff and what that was like. Was it intimidating? And what was that like for both of you, Bryant?
Well, for me, yeah, I think, you know, he had this aura and the entire presence was likened to a king in his castle. So, you know, when we came in, the first thing they would tell us about Hef is that, you know, just make sure to do the things the way he wants them. He always has everything standard. So it's really hard to mess it up because it's always the same setup every time. And just, you know, it was brought up to me as in, you know, like he was an intimidating figure, but as long as you didn't mess up, then it would be okay. So I was intimidated, of course, the first time I met him, and I was awestruck. And you know, this was before I had any real celebrity encounters,
sure,
even though I lived in LA my whole life, you know, maybe a few here and there. So it was pretty surreal. But, you know, after that first initial time of kind of being a little awestruck and a little, you know, taken aback, then it was just business as usual after that. I kind of got the jitters out of the way.
Sure.
And that was it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Carlina?
My first interaction was actually with Tatiana.
Oh, okay.
Actually, like Brian, I like to say he tricked me. He asked me, we were doing a morning party for Cooper and his friends. So Brian comes out and he's like, hey, you want to babysit this baby? And I'm like, okay, to what time? He says 10 p.m. So I came in at 7 a.m. and I'm like, oh, good. That's some good hours. Okay, Hef doesn't go out till 10 p.m.
Right.
Like, really?
Right.
I was there till like 5 in the morning.
Oh,
oh shit.
So I come in the pantry and I'd never been upstairs because I was on call outside. Mm-hmm. And I asked the butler on duty, you know, where's the baby? And they're like, oh, she's in the med room. And she had a sock and a dime. And I said, where's her things? They're like, oh, bedroom 4. So I go up the stairs and Hef's coming down the hall. And I'm like, sir, I'm a little lost. I'm trying to find bedroom 4. And he's like, oh, right this way. And he leads me into the room, to Tina's room. So that was her first. That was my first interaction with him.
I'm lost.
He's probably like, who is this?
Four.
Where's bedroom 4? Because they just said bedroom 4.
That's awesome.
And he's probably like, who is this? Because he had never seen me before.
He probably figured you were moving in. And he
yeah.
Great. Like,
great.
Random girl with the baby.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, that was my first time.
Oh, yeah. Love it. So there was different shifts for the butlers. What did your shifts look like? And I know, Carlina, what you ended up ultimately being in your position. So go ahead and you start, Carlina.
Oh my God, I was everywhere. The 6 a.m.s on the weekend.
Okay.
11 to 7s, 8 to 4s. Like they kept changing the schedule like every 6 months. Mm-hmm. So like my ending shift would be 6 to like 2 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And then, but ultimately it was like 11 to 7, but I always did pretty much majority of all the parties.
Yep.
So Leia would come in and
okay,
would work the party. So I'd get off at like 4 in the morning from being there at like 11 a.m.
And those shifts, definitely just from talking to, because Jameson was the night butler, and he was saying it was rowdy for him because he was like kind of the only one there, right, pulling most of the weight at night. And he was like, it was, you know, on the nights that Hef would go out with the girls, he was like, yeah, you knew that you were going to get bombarded, and it was cray cray.
They come home and want a snack.
24 hour room service.
A full dinner. Even.
Yeah.
Full
dinner. Yeah, for sure.
Brian? Yeah, him and his cat nets.
Is cat out. Were you all over the place too, Brian?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So when I started, you know, you work a few parties over a few months. And then if they think that you're a good enough and attentive worker, they'll ask you to cover shifts on the weekends or when majority of the butlers would be there for the movie nights and things like that. And then, you know, during the week. So I started like 4 p.m. to midnight shifts on Manly night and card night and things like that. And then I was working the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sundays.
Okay.
I started three days a week, then 4 days a week, and then finally 5 days a week. And for a good 5-6 years, I was the shift leader there. So my shift was the 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. shift, which I loved more than anything because I'm not a morning person.
Mm.
So it was actually great. I was working Sunday through Thursday. This was my favorite time, was Sunday through Thursday. So I finally have Fridays and Saturdays off.
That's primo.
This was in between when I was in undergrad and going to grad school. So it was perfect. I'd wake up at like 10 o'clock in the morning, get any errands run. I didn't even eat until I came in at like 1:45. I'd come in a little early so I could make a tuna sandwich. Carlina knows, she remembers that. And then yes, we'd have our dinner at 6 o'clock. I'd be done at 10 and I was in my early 20s. So, you know, in LA at 10 o'clock is when things were just starting.
Right.
So I'd be off work at 10 and I'd be like, where are we meeting up? What are we doing?
Perfect.
Yeah, that was a primo schedule.
But I worked plenty of graveyard shifts before I had my 2 to 10. I would do the 6:30 in the mornings on Saturdays and Sundays. And being in my early 20s, I would probably sleep, like Lena said, sleep a couple hours, come in, take a little nap under the buffet table in the morning.
Yes.
Hef and the girls would not, Hef and, or across the dining room chairs, Hef and the girls wouldn't wake up before 9.
Right.
So we had a system where one butler would get dressed, the other one, and we'd switch off every weekend. One butler would get dressed, the other one would be undressed, and then security would call us when Mickey or Brian Alea was coming up on the property. And then that second butler who wasn't dressed would go downstairs and dress and say, oh yeah, we had to go get something from downstairs if they came in.
That's awesome.
We had a system.
Yeah, totally.
Brilliant. Somebody's watching out. Yeah, that's great. Wake up.
Yeah, Jameson talked about taking his naps too. He actually, wait, what was his story that he got busted playing the guitar and he was sitting at the main dining room table and Hef walked in and Hef was like,
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So
he was always in something.
I know it was the gym memo, I think, is what he was
saying. Oh, yeah.
There would always be the gym memo regarding something Jameson had done.
That's pretty funny.
Did he ever tell you when he punched Kendra in the face by accident?
What? No.
He was sleeping and she came in and shook him. I guess she wanted to order. And he like, oh my God. And he socks her in the face.
Oh,
and he thought he was going to get fired.
I'm sure. He's like, oh, shit.
But I bet she took it. I bet Kendra, like,
yeah, Kendra's a
thankfully
badass.
She was the tough one.
Yeah, right. Totally.
He's probably like, he didn't get punched back.
Right. I can see her. Boom.
Kendra will be like, undercut.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Kendra would give it right back to
her. That's right. Oh, right, wow.
For sure. Did you guys ever get in trouble? Did you ever do anything that Hef either saw you or you got written up for, or any no-nos?
Not really. The only thing that I got in trouble for was with Kim, and then Hef had a talk with me about it. So we were always told, since we were the switchboard and answered the phones, we were always told never to give our real names, because if somebody crank called and somehow it got through, they would be like, oh, Carlina told me to call. Or Bryant told me to call. So we were told by Brian and by Guy, we were said, you know, they just say, you know, either give a fake name or don't give a name at all. So I would just say John Doe sometimes. Uh-huh. So Kimberly calls one night and I couldn't tell it was her because she was breaking up on her cell phone. She was in an area with bad reception. And so I answered the phone, Playboy, can I help you? And she's like, hey, can I talk to Hef? And I'm like, didn't sound like anybody I knew, and she was breaking up, so I couldn't tell. And I was like, I'm sorry, he's not available. And she's like, well, who is this? And I said, this is John. And she said, John who? I said, John Doe.
Oh, she didn't like that.
She goes, oh, and then her reception came back in, and she was like, well, John Doe, this is Kimberly. And as soon as I found out it was her, and as soon as I recognized it, I was like, I'm sorry, Kimberly, this is Bryant.
Yeah.
And she's like, put me through to Hef. And so,
happy.
Of course, I buzzed him and I put it through. And then I get a buzz back about 15 minutes later. Where's Bryant? And if we ever heard our names, I mean, most of the time, yeah. if you heard your name, because Hef just called down, when he buzzed down, he would just say, this is Hefner, and then tell you what he wanted.
Right.
So there wouldn't be any reason, unless he was looking for somebody like Brian Alea or Hank or something like that, to use your first name. So he's like, I need to speak to Bryant. And I was like, oh, crap.
Here it comes. So
he's
getting
like,
scolded.
What happened? He's like, what happened? And I said, we are always instructed to not use our names in case crank calls get through to you. And as soon as I found out it was Kim, I told her my name and I apologized to her. And he's like, well, you pissed her off. He's like, just next time, use your real name. I don't care if it's somebody fake. I was like, okay, sir. And that was probably the only real trouble I ever got into. That's why I worked there for 18 years.
Yeah.
Because I stayed away from trouble.
Yeah, right. I guess. Were there lots of crank calls?
Yeah.
Oh, all the time.
Oh my God. Yes.
What do you do with them?
Yeah. How do they get that damn number?
Oh, the number. This number was publicly listed.
What?
Oh yeah.
So sometimes
I still remember it.
Yep. I could tell you the number too.
Yeah, but we won't. It's actually disconnected. I've tried.
Damn.
I would imagine. Sometimes, and Lena can attest to this too. We used to have a game where we would try to see how much we could mess with them back.
Right.
And so sometimes we would use *69 and like call them back and crank call them. or sometimes we could just like we would have like a measure of like what was the best one or the worst one. And then there were times where there were people that like were that had mental health issues that called. Carlina remembers Diane.
Your best friend.
Tell us about Diane, Carlina.
My best friend Diane. So Diane was a woman who
she thought she was Heff's daughter.
She thought she was Heff's daughter, and she lived in Chicago. And so she used to call us very, very drunk, three sheets to the wind or more. And she would just go off about how she was there at the beginning of Playboy and how she, she was Heff's daughter and that she needed to talk with. She never asked to be put through necessarily. She just wanted to talk to us and drunkenly ramble about it.
Oh
and
my then God.
Every
so
once in
funny.
A while we would hear somebody in the background going, "Who are you talking to?" And she'd be like, "Oh, I gotta go." And she would hang up or that person would hang up. And we Lena and I would always have conversations about like, what was Diane like in real life, like outside of these phone calls?
Yeah.
What was Diane like was in her real life?
Yeah. That was her whole life right there.
That's hysterical that she
we
just
used
wanted
to chat. Conference them together. We used to cross conference them. We'd have two crank calls on the line and put them together.
That was so smart.
We invented that. We would have two crazy people calling at the same time and we would just connect them and then put mute it on our end and we'd let them just talk to one another. And they were both thinking that they were talking to us.
Oh my God, you guys are too funny. That's awesome.
I love this.
I love it too.
We used to take their numbers. Remember, Bryant? We used to take their numbers down.
Yeah, because we got caller ID finally after 2004.
So you could see.
And so we were able to see the number that called. And so we would take their numbers down and we would just put them together and let the crazy talk to crazy.
That's hysterical, you guys. I love it.
Their own medicine, yeah.
I'm going to remember that. I love that part.
That's a good let crazy talk to crazy and horny wits.
Right.
Yeah, horny wits.
So awesome. Oh, wow.
So you both worked the parties, right? And just because you're a butler didn't necessarily mean that you worked the parties. So was that kind of a unique situation for you? And what were your favorite parties? Were they kind of equally the same and a shit show for you guys? Because a lot of work, I would imagine.
Yeah, a lot of work. I mean, I had double duty. Like I would do coat check. Some That's night. Right. And then we started doing cabana service.
Oh yeah.
So like I always say to Olay, I'm like your guinea pig. Oh, we're going to do this. So you're going to do it this week. So I was cabana captain, coat check, camera, nurse.
Right.
Yeah. And sometimes you worked Heff's table because the girls requested you.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just cabana. It was like, that was later on where you got to do like the real cabana stuff, but you were doing Heff's table. I started out doing Heff's table or just being a general butler. But then, when the parties really started taking off around 99, I used to work with the photographers because I knew a lot of celebrities and I wasn't a person that eventually when we started meeting all these celebrities, I never got starstruck. So I never my behavior didn't change from who I was. And so Elaine and Kenneth, the camera people, would have me help them. They'd give me a list before the party of which celebrities were going to be there that were on the guest list, whether they showed up or not. Yeah. And I would be responsible for helping them get pictures of the celebrities with either other celebrities, with Heff, or with other playmates. Mm-hmm. So there would be a time where I'd see Ben Affleck and I'd be like, oh crap, I got to go get a playmate to go pose with him. And then I also wrote down the names. Like if there were people in the picture that weren't famous, the beginning of the issues of Playboy, they have the world of Playboy where it shows everybody that comes to the parties. That's what these pictures were for. So I would work with the photographers to make sure to get their to get these celebrities and get them. And if there was a time when the camera people had already left, then Carlina or I would have to go in and get the house camera and we would have to take the picture ourselves. In fact, if you want a story, The year in 99, it was the summer after, it was Midsummer Night's Dream, mm-hmm. and it was the summer after Leonardo DiCaprio was in Titanic. So at that time, you know, we were used to getting a lot of B and C celebrities, but he was the A-list, like, number one male celebrity in the world.
Yeah.
And he kept telling the camera people that, like, he was there with, like, Seth Green. And he kept telling them, let me have a few more drinks. Let me have a few more drinks. I'll do it later. And he kind of just blew them off the whole night. And this was like, this is the biggest star in the world. They're like, we need this for Hef. We need this for the magazine. And so I was like, okay, finally it was 1 o'clock in the morning and Elaine and Kenneth were leaving and they're like, well, I guess we couldn't get what we wanted. And I said, well, let me try. I'll grab the house camera. You guys go and I'll see if they'll do something for me. So I ended up going up to them and they were both really hammered by this point. And I went up to them and I said, hey, Leo, bro to bro. Like, I don't know where that came from, but I'm like, bro to bro. This is only for Hef's personal library, or maybe at the beginning in the world of Playboy. Can you just take a picture? Can you just take a picture with Seth? And then I won't ask you for anything else. And he goes, he looks at me completely drunken and he goes, if you promise to take a picture with us, then we will take one together. And then I had a friend named Heather, and this was her first party that she was working. And she's a bigger Seth Green fan than she is a Leo fan. And I was like, I grabbed her really quick because she was behind me. And I was like, okay, I need you to not freak out. And I need you to just do this. And if you do this, I'll ask for a picture for you. And so she was like, okay, what is it? And I said, just point and click. And so she took the picture of me and Seth Green and Leo DiCaprio. And then they took a picture together. And then I asked them to take a picture with her, which they did. And that photo not only made it into the world of Playboy magazine, but it also made it into the photo gallery on the second floor.
Oh. And I love that photo gallery.
I was Elaine and Kenneth's hero for like the rest of my time.
That's awesome. I have a real funny story about Leo DiCaprio that year that I'll share with you guys at the end. So it's off the record, but you guys will crack up. It's a good one. It's one of my favorites. My daughter's looking at me going, don't tell the story, mother. But it's a good one. I love it that you're like bro to bro. And he's like, okay, that's cool. That worked out.
Yeah, because I think he was put off by the professional photographers. But
sure.
When I came up to him with just the house camera, like loosey goosey, he was also hammered. But
yeah,
he was cooler with it.
Yeah, so. That's funny. Funny celebrity stories. I definitely want to do like another round table with the Playmates and let's dish our funniest celebrity stories, because I've got one with Leo and then I've got one with Mini-Me at the mansion that was hysterical.
Oh, I have to tell my Nick Cage story then.
Oh, yes. Can you share that right now? That's a good one. Carrie's got
it. Okay, so I'm like madly in love with Nicolas Cage, like just so in love since Valley Girl. And I finally got my boss invited into the mansion as my guest because he'd been bugging me for years, right? Get me in. And I said, all right, I'll put your name in and see. I didn't even think that they'd allow it, but he was allowed to come with me for the party. And I said, listen, you can be my date for the party, but if Nicolas Cage is there, I don't know you. Yeah. Like, disappear.
Exactly.
I don't know you. Don't talk to me.
Don't acknowledge
world,
me.
Right? Yeah. He laughed because he's like, you know, he's never been there. So he has no idea what the odds are. And they still weren't that good. Mm-hmm. But that was my rule. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to a bunch of Playmates in a circle. And my date keeps tapping me on the shoulder. And I keep going like, this, like, leave me alone. I'm talking to all my girls, you know, having a great time. And finally, he kind of turns me around and he goes, I want to introduce you to Nick. And he then promptly walks away, exactly like I instructed him to.
Right.
Only I can't speak.
She's froze.
I've totally froze. And this has never happened to me ever. And he goes, this is a great party, you know? And I'm like, I can't even say yes.
That's so damn funny. And he's like, nice conversation.
Yeah. And I was like so sad. And the truth is, I think he actually went home with another Playmate.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
I was destroyed.
That's classic. You're just like, Oh my God. I know. I can't. That's fantastic.
I had my chance. I had my chance with Nicolas Cage. Well, so and I blew it.
That was That was such a fun time. Speaking of that, you were there, Bryant, for the first party when they started happening again, because we were there when it was, you know, the boys were babies and Kimberly and Hef were married and it was a family home and we only heard of what it was like. And then it was so fun to experience that and for those parties to happen again. And it was really special.
That first, it was February of 98, right after she moved out. It was a Valentine's Day disco party.
Yep.
And literally, they only invited probably 250, 300 people. It was mostly in the Great Hall and then just outside where the little outside bar was. Not even the bar outside by the grotto, but like just the little bar. And I just remember it because that was my first real experience other than like little fundraiser parties. And the Red Hot Chili Peppers showed up.
Nice.
The Black Eyed Peas when they were still underground before they hit it big with Fergie.
Nice.
It was and Adam Duritz, the lead singer of Counting Crows, because he's actually a good friend of Julie McCullough. She's got so many friends.
Yeah, she does. She knows everybody.
But that was the first time that it was just like, oh, my gosh, this is the Playboy Mansion that you hear about.
Yeah.
Right. And that was just like a small sample of it before. And then it was in 99 that we really went back to the big parties like Midsummer Night's Dream and things like that. So you had asked originally recently, a few minutes ago before I went off on my story, you had asked about which party was our favorite. And I would have to say Midsummer's is probably everyone's favorite. I also really enjoyed the Halloween party.
Yeah. Because
my birthday's Halloween.
Oh,
and on nice. my 21st birthday, my birthday was a Sunday. So the Halloween parties were always the Saturday before Halloween. So on that particular night, it was that Saturday night, the 30th. So that meant that at midnight during the party, it was my birthday.
Right.
And it was really neat because that's when Hef was dating Sandy, Mandy, and Brandy.
Right.
And they basically at midnight, and I had no idea they were going to do this. They stopped the DJ and they got up on stage and sang happy birthday, had all 1,000 people in the tent singing happy birthday to me for my 21st, which was.
That's amazing.
You know, when people ask you, how did you spend your 21st? It was like the first minute of my 21st was being serenaded by everybody at the Playboy Mansion during the Halloween party. So
that's awesome.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's huge.
Great story.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for sharing. Did you have preferences on the party, Carlina, that you liked, or are they kind of all the same to you?
Easter was fun.
Yeah, Easter was my favorite really too.
Yeah, because you get to see the girls grow up and their children, and then you get the baskets. I mean, that was a good one. Midsummer's, pretty much all of them. Even some of the parties that we had that when we rented out the house. There were some cool ones like the ESPY Awards,
right?
Things like that.
Well, speaking of Easter, so what did you guys think about the blowing of the eggs?
Yeah, I want to hear.
I never did it.
You did it?
You didn't have to do it?
No, I never did it.
That's the nice thing. We had to hide them all.
So let's preface it for our audience so they know. So every Easter, Hef would put on a huge event, and it was for the kids. It was for the Playmates and their children and, you know, friends, family. And on top of all the animals that were already there in the grounds, he would bring in more exotic animals. But the coolest thing was that there was 3,500 hand-painted eggs by the staff that was then hidden around the property. And then the eggs that that the kiddos found, they were able to keep. And I mean, the coolest artwork. I told my daughter, I was like, I guarantee you have an egg from every butler or staff member there.
One of a kind.
Yeah.
And incredibly fragile and beautiful artwork.
And the kids would go, each and every single kid would go home with a huge basket. On top of it, they would win in their age category and go home with these amazing gifts. And it's just like, again, like it was at no expense was ever spared with anything that Hef did, whether it was the publication, the parties, whatever. It was done the right way, meticulously. So I like that you said Easter and about hiding the eggs. So first of all, how long did it take to paint all those eggs? When did you guys start doing that?
Well, I think that's the nice thing. So I don't have an artistic bone in my body as far as painting. So I was lucky. Lena and I were lucky enough to not be part of that. But some of the other butlers did get roped into it. But mostly it was a Brian and Guy thing where they were the ones doing majority of it. And of course, because they were always pissed off during that time because it took so much energy and concentration. But we were mostly in charge of hiding these eggs.
Oh, cool.
And I always told them, like, why do we let the kids go home with the eggs? Why don't you just recycle them year after year? And some of them we still had in storage.
Oh, really?
But nope. Hef wanted them repainted all new every year.
Yeah. So, and they are extraordinary. I mean, it's so neat. The artwork is just like vast.
Yeah.
That's funny that you said they were all pissed off, because I was like, when we were interviewing them, I was like, oh, what a labor of love. And JD goes, I don't know about a labor of love. I was like, oh, pain in your ass. He goes, yep, because we had to take those things home. Yeah.
And, like, the first 20 might be fun. The next 2,000 might suck.
Over it. Well, my daughter thanks you guys for doing that.
Yes, our kids all thank you for hiding them very well. And of course, when my son was very young, I was helping him, you know, when he's like 3. And
I know, you I was helping scope him. And you're like, oh, yeah.
I was the playmate that, like, refused to wear high heels. I'd wear a cute little dress and tennis shoes so I could get serious about it. Yep. But you guys hit him really well.
There were some cheaters.
that would be walking around before the actual, before the hunt began.
I like rules.
I think Daddy did that. Yeah. Was her daddy.
Scoping it out.
My daughter's father, he's like, I see him, and I was like, you're not supposed to do that. Let the kids find him.
Yeah, our kids all have very good memories because of that. It's very wonderful.
That's funny. So, Carlina, we want to ask you about, you know, what that experience was like to, you know, be there at the end and then to get that news that Hef had passed. I mean, that had to be not only surreal, but that hard, just hard.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say too much
detail,
but it's public. But it was hard. It was hard. To this day, I still get a little emotional thinking about it.
Of course.
But being in the house when it happened and then kind of getting the nod from Dr. Saginaw. He can't, you know how Dr. Saginaw is. He kind of just walks around, and he said he told me by shaking his head, but I didn't get that. But it was a tough night. It was a tough night. I couldn't eat. I kept pacing because I knew something was wrong, but nobody was talking. And it's just me and Lady, the dog, walking around, and she keeps looking at me. And I actually said a prayer because I just felt like something is wrong. And then finally, Doc comes in again, and he asked me to dial a number, and he tells the person on the phone that a legend had passed.
You overheard.
And I just fell back, and I just said, did you just say what I thought you said? And he shook his head. And then it was just like, you just really don't know what to do with yourself. And I just remember going into the kitchen and telling Chef Dan, who had been trying to convince me, like, everything will be okay. Everything will be okay. Mm. And telling him, and I don't remember how the words came out, like if it was just Hef or he died or he's gone. I think I said he's gone. And I just saw the color leave Dan's face. He just kind of sat back, and I felt like people wanted to scream, but you just kind of
couldn't, because you guys were, excuse me, because you guys still had to keep it together. I mean, you're there, you know, at the house and, you know, and I know that, you know, when you did leave the grounds, and certainly when all of us found out, like, I still get teary-eyed too. It was like, we all knew, you know, obviously Hef was going to pass. But my God, when that news came, it was so sad.
Yeah.
It was something else. It was surreal because we always get pranked, you know, when they do the things that, oh, the death pranks, and you get a little taste of it, but to actually experience it, where the phones, the pantry phone's going off, the house phone's going off, the family's phones are going off, my personal phone is going off, but you can't do anything. Mm-mm. So we're instructed not to pick up. And I could see employees' numbers coming up, but it's like,
shit.
And we always, like Sheila, she asked me to call her, but I couldn't answer. And I think when she finally got through, she was, I think, pissed off at me. She just hung the phone up on me. And I said, I apologize. I couldn't, the instructions was not to pick up. And just kind of like, doing your job. So it wasn't until I got home that actually when I turned on the news and saw it across that I actually broke down this. But it was trying to stay strong because, you know, Cooper and Marston in there. And it was one moment where Cooper did hug me, and I'm like, I got to get out of here, Dan. I got to go.
Falling apart. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
And then I think it was it the last interview we did with Stuart, that it was 90 days that y'all had to clear out the mansion, and what an undertaking that was. I mean, that was massive.
Yeah. Massive. I mean, well, we were told someone else was going to do it, but we ended up doing it. It was like so much stuff where we actually just formed a train and just literally handed things off to each other.
Wow.
But
yeah, we were, the interview we were just talking about was Stuart Brotman. We interviewed last week, and he's the one that wrote and just published the book last year on Huff's birthday, The First Amendment Lives On. Mm-hmm. And I encourage you both to get it. The eight conversations in there were all recipients of the HMH Foundation First Amendment Awards. But he was speaking directly to the Library of the Archives, because Christy had had set it up for him to do his research, and he was supposed to come up to the mansion and be able to have access to it. And then he was going to meet Huff. Well, Huff passed. So she called him and said, you know, she was sending him pictures of the archives being loaded on to a moving truck. Right. And then they didn't know for almost a year, like, where it was. And then, and then it was like in a storage facility. But I was like, God, how wild to get those images of, of the archives.
No, I can't imagine the work. Yeah. I mean, there's many lifetimes.
That was another job that they gave me, Scrapbook Saturday. So you would. We would take the pictures, and then Mary decides, honey, because everything was an opening, honey, before she gave you an assignment. Mm-hmm. And says, I need you to identify. So every Saturday I would go in to the little side scrapbook room, and security would give me the list of who attended this weekend. So I'd have to match the names and write it on the back of the photos, and then it would get handed off to Huff.
Interesting.
And then he would enter them into the scrapbook. But then a lot of our photos that we did take, like Bryant was speaking of, ended up in the scrapbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also had some when Elaine, the main photographer, no longer desired to go out when Huff would used to go out on Wednesday nights. She was like, please take over for me, because Huff knows you. So he trusts you. And all you got to do is go out and take pictures with them eating dinner or out in the clubs or things like that. So when I was at UCLA and only working part time, no longer full time. That's what I would do for probably a good year and a half, is I was the photographer when they went out. So I know all about it.
Wow. Yeah.
It would be so nice if there was a book put out just of photographs.
Yeah. Just of the scrapbooks.
Yeah. Just the photographs.
Or if they had the public had access to them somehow to be able to see them, if they were, you know, an exhibit, something.
But I mean, I would buy a coffee table book.
Absolutely.
It just brings, I mean, my memory is terrible. I live through photographs. I love photographs. They just spark everything for me. I'm like, oh, I remember that party. Yep. I remember when we did that, or wore that, or met those people.
And you know what was interesting about what Stuart said too was that Huff had used that same typewriter since he was 16 years old, all the way
the manual,
and he had his last entry a couple of weeks before he passed at 91, and the same fonts. And I said, well, of course, because that then just points to him as the consummate editor. And then when you look at the publication Playboy and how meticulous everything was, and you know that Huff approved every finite detail from the front cover to the back cover, amazing, right down to the font, the placement, that, you know, the advertisements, everything. So when he said that, I was like, well, yeah, that completely makes sense that it was consistent throughout from the time he was 16 to he was 91.
Did you find some of the eccentric things that became so normal to you at the beginning, were there funny things? I mean, like we know Huff has certain meals, you know, on rotation and the things that he likes, but they became normal, but were there some at the beginning you're like, okay, that's a little odd?
Well, everybody knows the crackers. He doesn't like the brown part of it, so we'd have to go through each cracker. Or the chips unbroken and those kind of things.
I don't think everybody knows.
Know,
so tell our audience about, like, you had to have the certain placement of the chips, and like it was always meticulous, and there was pictures of how it's supposed to be laid out. So share that.
Yeah. Like Jameson could tell you, because he got yelled at one time for not putting the applesauce at the top. Mm-hmm. So he's like, the rewards go at the top.
The reward. That's so cute.
So everything's set a certain way, but toward like the ending years, if someone messed up, he wouldn't really say anything. And I'm thinking, wow, I guess he forgot his own demands, because he's not really speaking on it anymore, or doesn't care.
Huh. Yeah.
or
there was a funny instance. So obviously Carlina and I were on the show Girls Next Door, and in fact, if you pause it before the Hef and the girls come in on the opening credits, Carlina and I and Brian Olea and Hank are characters in the background.
Yeah.
And originally the show was going to be called Hef's World, and it was created to reflect the upstairs downstairs relationship. So Brian uh-huh. and Carlina and I were supposed to have a bigger role, which they didn't pay us anyway, so I didn't care that if we were background characters. We didn't get anything extra for it, whereas the girls did. Right. And so when E officially picked it up, they were like, it's going to be more interesting if we focus on the girls and not the workers. And we were just like, okay, that's fine.
Well, we were too scared to talk, remember?
I was going to mention that. So the pilot episode, which you can find on YouTube, was called Hef's World, or if you just look up Girls Next Door pilot episode, Carlina and I are speaking about and talking about how to prepare the soup, where we had to make sure that there were no crackers with browned edges, no broken crackers. The cream cheese had to be on the left, the applesauce on top, his milk in the frosted glass. And then we were saying, so it's just one designated person, whoever wants to bring the soup up. Newer people are either too nervous or they really want to do it because they want to meet him. But when we, you know, had just an established group of butlers that were doing it every day, we tried to make it interesting by putting out a deck of cards, and whoever picked the lowest card at random was the loser that had to go bring the soup up.
And I love it. That's great.
The funny thing about that was we went through all that on video. You know, we got recorded doing that and everything. And then the soup was brought up. And when Hef was watching the dailies, he was not too happy about that. So he had actually, he had talked to me about it. And he's like, I brought the soup up one night. And he looked at me and he said, is it true that the person with the lowest card brings up soup? And I was like, well, yeah, it's just a little game that we play. And he's like, oh. And I was like, sir, would you feel more comfortable if the one who drew the highest card? And he's like, actually, I would. Yeah. So I came downstairs and I told Carlina and I told Eileen and Anthony. I was like, it looks like from now on, we're going to have to do highest card goes.
Hef is the reward.
Yeah. He's like, is it true? It's the lowest number. He did not like that. Aww.
No, he was not a fan.
That's a great story.
Wow. I mean, the tray was heavy. So that's part of the problem. Yeah, that was a heavy tray.
Right, sure.
He used to ask me all the time, how are you doing that? And I'm like, sir, you know, I would kick out and say, I've been working out, or, you know, it's how you bend. And, you know, because that was his whole thing. Like, oh, she's a girl. How's she doing it?
Right. Okay. That's funny. I love it. Now, Carlina, you are currently in a position, right, as a butler in Vegas at the Palms, and you attend to the suites, right, to the high rollers?
Cosmopolitan.
Oh, the Cosmopolitan. Okay. So, and certainly, like, your resume with I was a butler at the Playboy Mansion, they're like, okay.
Can't get better than that.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. When I really didn't have to say much. She says, oh, you do what we do here. You did what we do here. Mm. That was like basically my interview. And people know because she told people. So you'd run across other employees. And if they're a big fan, they would ask questions but there's a heavy Playboy presence there.
Yeah.
Number one, we do the midsummers. Yeah. Mm. The first thing I saw another butler pointed out was Holly's book in one of the penthouses. And then there's older editions of Playboy. There's in the hallways. There's pictures of girls with bunny ears.
Holly's book.
Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
I like all the other stuff, but why is Holly's book there?
Yeah, that's interesting.
I like, though, that they're doing the homage to Playboy.
Yeah, it's like this unspoken thing. And I just thought, wow, it keeps following me.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Yeah.
It works in my benefit because then when people find out certain guests or. Oh, they'll make sure they tell their guests. So I'm the person that gets thrown into the party rooms because of my experience with Playboy. It's like, you can't really tell me anything. I've seen it all. I can handle a lot of people. So it's sort of easy. So
for sure. Bryant, do your students know that you are a butler at the mansion? Do you share that?
Sometimes. When I teach intro psychology, I teach the memory chapter, and we talk about a concept called flashbulb memory. flashbulb memory is basically having a stronger memory of an event because it's so emotionally charged. And so because your emotions are running high, whether it's really scared, really sad, or really happy, you remember small details where, that you wouldn't normally remember in a regular memory. Who was there, what time of day it was, like little details. And so I was saying that on September 11th, 9/11, yeah. I had just graduated from undergrad and I was now just working at Playboy full time. And this is when Jameson was getting in trouble because and complaining that we didn't do enough to prepare the graveyard shift.
That's exactly what he said. I can vouch for that.
JD and the morning butlers would say that graveyard didn't do their job. And then we would complain because JD and Alan might have mailed it in a little bit and we had to do a little extra work. So the bosses were a little upset by that and they wanted to put us in the other person's shoes to see from their perspective. Mm-hmm. And so, as I told you, I'm not a morning person. The week of 9/11, that was my week to come in and work 6:30 in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon.
Wow.
So I was saying that on 9/11, I got to my car. And it's all autopilot because I'm not awake in the morning. So I was listening to music, not the radio. And I walked through the mansion and I look outside on the TV. And sometimes maintenance gets there a little early, like 5:30 in the morning. And they'll put on some old movie or something on the TV back there by the soda machine. And it was a plane crashing into a building. And I was like, oh, what old movie is this? And then rubbed my eyes and I looked and I was like,
oh, my God,
holy crap. This is
real,
not a movie. This is the news and this is actually happening. Ugh. And it was me and JD.
Wow.
So I don't know if JD shared this with you guys.
He did. He actually did.
Okay. And, and then about 45 minutes later, what we do in the morning is we fresh squeeze orange juice for anybody that wants it. It's not usually Hef, but, so we fresh squeeze the oranges and the oranges are outside, by the TV. So I went back out there to squeeze oranges and I saw it and I was like, oh, they must be showing a replay. And then, nope, it was the second plane hitting the second tower. And JD and I were just dumbfounded.
Yeah.
And then about probably half an hour after that, then we heard news. It was David Robinson was one of the secretaries upstairs. And he was the one that told us, we didn't see it on TV, but he's the one that told us that the Pentagon got hit.
Yeah.
And so about 15 minutes after that, Tina calls and I answer the phone. Playboy, can I help you? And she goes, hey, Bryant, it's Tina. I was like, hey, Tina, what's up? She's like, I heard that the Pentagon got hit. And we said, yeah, we all heard the same thing. It's just, we're devastated. It's just crazy. And she goes, how many Pentagons do we have? And I went, hold on a sec. I'm going to put you on hold for just a second. And then I put it on hold.
Let me get Diane on the line.
Let me get Diane to talk to you.
She's going to explain everything.
I placed her on hold and I said, JD, it's for you because I wasn't ready to deal with that.
I literally
passed the phone to JD. I was like, JD, call for you. And I just walked out. I talk about it with my students. And then some of them are like, oh. And I was like, well, because some of them Google you before they have you. Of course, they have a website called Rate My Professor where that just tells you like their students' ratings of you. Uh-huh. But if some of them do the full Google search, then they'll come up to me and they'll be like, so I see something about Playboy and I'm like, I'm not ashamed of it. The only reason I don't start class with that and I don't do that, this is like halfway through the semester that I do, two-thirds through that I do that memory chapter. I said, the only reason I don't say anything is because I want you guys asking me questions about psychology and not about that.
Yep. That's smart. Yep. That makes sense for sure. So actually, JD didn't share that story. He shared the story of the riots in Los Angeles because it was Karina Harney's Playmate of the Year party. And she was saying how awful it was because it was, you could see the smoke and you could the helicopters. And JD was like, I remembered those key moments. And then he did say 9/11, but he did not tell us the story that you passed the phone to him. JD, it's for you. He probably was like, said, no,
you deal with this. I'm not ready to deal with this.
That's heavy. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. This has been so fun and we've learned even more things and some funny stories. I love the crazy and crazy. That's awesome.
Diane's the new Karen.
Diane's the new Karen. So we like to end the show. We ask two questions to each of our guests and it's always interesting to hear what you guys say. So Carlina, we're going to start with you. Three words that define Hef to you.
Generous, gracious, and funny.
Very good.
He was funny.
He was funny. Those are some of my favorite memories. He was always smiling and laughing. That's like what I remember.
He was loving.
He was lovely.
Yeah. Wow. Those are great.
Yeah. Good ones.
Let's add a fourth. Gentleman.
Absolute consummate gentleman.
I love that.
Yeah, for sure. Bryant?
I would say, definitely intelligent.
Yeah.
I would say charismatic.
Yeah.
And definitely genuine.
Through and through.
Mm-hmm.
He was so transparent about who he was and what he expected, and he never swayed from that.
Excuses Mm-mm. about it either. Mm-mm. He stood his ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We always say it's like, you know, you may or may not agree with how Hef lived his lifestyle, but he designed it by design and he did exactly how he wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about him and I applaud that and the world should know. Okay. Yeah. Second question. And Carlina, you may have had the opportunity to do this. Had you had the chance to say anything to Hef before he passed or in memoriam, what would you say?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The general consensus.
For the additional family.
Mm. We are so blessed to have our Playboy family, aren't we? There's nothing like it out there.
Well, sure. Also, Hef was very lucky to have you there with him at the end like mm-hmm. that. Makes me feel better to know that you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something Marston said to me. And I was like, what? He's like, I'm glad you were here. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what am I? Because I couldn't figure out what to do. Like, you know how the thing is, you want to eat? You want to eat? I'm running around. You want to eat?
Right. Yeah. Dealing with grief. Yeah. Yeah.
But your presence was important to them.
I love that Marston told you that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bryant, had you had the chance, what would you say?
So I didn't have the chance right before he passed, but one of my favorite moments ever was that I was always the person when somebody was leaving, if they were retiring or if they were moving on, I would try to kind of prank them. Sometimes we would get pies in the face. Sometimes we would have somebody stand on the roof and we'd have water poured down on them.
Awesome.
And things like that. So when it was my turn, I wasn't leaving, but I got into a PhD program to get my doctorate at UCLA. So I had to go from full-time down to part-time. And so I was leaving the shift leader position. And earlier in the night, two playmates had pushed me in the pool. And then after I changed, the butlers all basically duct taped me to a chair, and they hit me with 12 whipped cream pies all over me. So,
then they left me
in the front circle by the fountain, so that when Hef and the girls got out of the Sunday movie, that they would and all the guests that they would come and see me, basically tied to the chair, covered in whipped cream. And Hef was always one that wanted, if things were going to be going on at his house, he wanted to be in on the fun.
Ah.
So, guests came out and the girls came out and other people, and they were taking pictures, taking selfies with me. Things like that.
That's so
funny. And then Hef came out and I couldn't do anything. Like I was literally stuck.
Yeah.
And I came, you know, and then Hef came over and I was like, would you like to take a picture with me? He's like, I would love to.
Aww.
And then he looked down at me and I looked up at him. And I said, well, here we are. And he goes, are you leaving? And I said, well, not for good. I'm just going down to part-time because I got into a PhD program, but I'm still going to be around. And he looked at me and he goes, I told you, you would make memories that would last a lifetime.
Oh,
and that
awesome
was
a moment.
So I have a picture of him shaking my hand after I got out of the pool.
Cool.
And then later that night of him posing with me and telling me that and posing for the camera. So, he also, my parents passed away a year apart in 2004, 2005. The first year when my mom passed, I got a card that you can tell was kind of his stamped signature.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2005, after my father passed, it was a different signature. It was one that was actually his, and uh-huh. he had, you know, given his condolences. And basically there was a little bit of time before I left that I was able to say, you know, you've always been somebody I looked up to like a father figure and just thank you. Thank you for the experience.
Yeah.
Thank you for treating me like family. Thank you for all of this that you created that I now have an extended family. Just thank you.
You know, what's so interesting about that is the stories that you tell and the memories that you make and how have suggested that none of them have anything to do with naked women.
Nope. Amen to that. Good observation, Carrie. Exactly.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, the mansion was a home. It was a family home.
That was only such a small part of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I'd love to see those pictures, Brian. Maybe we could use them for the interview on the video portion. That's awesome.
Do you want me? I can email them to you.
Yeah, sure. Oh, you guys, thank you so much.
Wow,
this was awesome.
Yeah, it means a lot to continue these memories for us. So thank you.
It's super important. And, you know, again, this whole podcast is an homage to Hugh Hefner and who he was as a man, as a human being, as the icon, and how blessed the world is that Playboy even was created and existed. How different our world would be if Playboy never existed. I can't even imagine it. He was responsible for so much social and cultural change, and we are all so lucky to have that direct relationship with him. And
well, thank you so much, both of you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. All right, I'll let you guys know when the show's out. Good chatting with you.
Yeah,
you too.
Appreciate you guys.
At the reunion? Right.
Oh yeah,
at the reunion.
Yeah, I'll be at the reunion. Brian, you'll be there too. Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to take the opportunity to go around and get little snippets from everybody.
I'd like to.
It's the 30th. I told you, April 30th.
Oh, that's coming up.
Yeah. You need to come. Go see your kids.
I know.
They're in LA.
Oh, good. Well, so nice to see you both.
All right, guys. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. Thank you.
Thanks for making time.
Bye.
All right. Awesome show. Oh. All right. So this is our final show with Miss Carrie Yazel in the studio. Thank you, Carrie, for joining. From Karina and I both, thank you. Truly. It's been super fun to have you. And
it's been a blast.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that you asked me.
It's been rad. All right. I'm Echo.
I'm Carrie.
We'll see you next week. This is The Bunny Chronicles. Bye.